Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the news and stories behind the new definition of public education. I'm David Hudson Tuthill, assistant editor of Redefined. In this episode, Ron Matus sits down with teacher and author Rebecca Friedrichs, the California public school teacher best known for being the lead plaintiff in a high-profile lawsuit that would end the union practice of forcibly collecting agency fees from non-union members. While that case ended with the death of Justice Antonin Scalia, another lawsuit, Janus versus AFSCME, did end the practice late last year. In her new autobiography, Standing Up to Goliath, Friedrichs details her rise from teacher to activist, including the role choice played. Friedrichs describes herself as a conservative, but school choice isn't conservative, she says, no matter how it's portrayed by critics in the press. Her support is personal. According to her, school choice saved her older son's life. This interview took place by phone on January 25th, 2019. Thank you for listening and enjoy the interview.
Well, Rebecca, many people know you because of the lawsuit, because of Friedrichs versus California Teachers Association. I hope I got that name right. And because of this fight that you led for many years as a public school teacher to try and end the practice that teachers unions had of forcibly collecting fees from non-union members. But what I don't think people know is that you're also a very strong supporter of educational choice. So how can it be, this was going to be my first question, how can it be that a public school teacher can love school choice? I thought, based on what I keep hearing, from critics in the press and every place else, that public school teachers are supposed to hate school choice.
Well, I'm so glad you asked me that question, because the problem out there in the press, out there in the public, is that it's teachers' unions that are the voice of teachers. And teachers' unions are polar opposite from teachers themselves. So teachers actually, for people like me who were in the sixth grade and knew, I'm going to be a teacher someday. I love kids. Mm-hmm. I want to get in the classroom and teach. Those of us who love the kids put the children first. So what's best for the children is to put them in a school situation that is best for that child, best for that family, whatever that may be. So the teachers' unions right now are pushing this moratoria on charter schools across the country. They are trying to stop charter schools, limit charter schools, and there's only one reason why. It's because most charter schools are non-union, and the union wants to unionize all teachers because they want our money so they can collect more billions from us every year and so they can control our educational system and our country. That's what that's all about. So the first thing is teachers' unions don't speak for real teachers. The second thing is teachers' unions have manipulated real teachers a lot. They come into our meetings, our mandatory staff meetings, we're all there with our principals, and the union walks in, and they manipulate teachers, and they have been telling us for my entire career, so I started teaching in 1988, they tell us that charter schools are harming children, that the teachers don't know how to teach, that the charters don't have to answer to anyone, that they don't close down even when they're abusing kids. They tell us these horror stories that are lies with a capital L, mm-hmm. and teachers believe it because teachers love kids. And so they're being manipulated by unions to believe that kids are being harmed in charter schools. So my goal, and one of the reasons I made sure I wrote a lot about school choice in my book, is to re-educate teachers to help them to understand, look, most of these charter schools are doing a bang-up job, not because the teachers are so much better in these schools, but because the union is not in these schools. Mm. So the schools are able to teach rather than being controlled by unions. So I feel a huge burden to educate loving teachers on the truth, because public school teachers are more likely than the average people out there to put their own kids in private school or some sort of a school choice situation.
Yes.
So obviously public school teachers value school choice.
Well, you had a great example early in your book about, you know, some of the things that the unions will say or do to denigrate school choice. And I think this was chapter 4, you know, when you were describing how when you were a young teacher, there was this ballot initiative in California. I think it's 1993 that would have created a system of private school vouchers in California. And there was this really gripping situation that you described. Could you, for our listeners, could you describe that? Because it was so shocking. I thought that would be a good thing to share with readers real quick.
So I was about, I don't know, I might have been about a fifth year teacher. I was pretty young, pretty naive still. I still hadn't figured out that the unions were 100% about the unions, and they didn't care about kids, and they didn't care about teachers. They were just using us. I hadn't figured that out yet. There was a voucher initiative here in California. I live in Southern California. And I read about this voucher initiative, and all of my friends who had little kids thought it was a lifesaver. And I go to work, and I'm in a mandatory staff meeting, and the union walks in and starts telling us how we have to defeat this voucher initiative. It's evil. If the voucher initiative passes, we're all going to lose our jobs. We're all going to have to, you know, go back to no breaks and you know, wearing skirts down to our ankles. They always tell us all these lies.
Oh, my
gosh.
Want
to push their, you know, push their agenda. They really do. It's amazing what they say to teachers. So they started all this really angry push. All of us had to defeat vouchers. We were told we had to phone bank. We had to go knock door to door. We had to do all this to defeat vouchers. So I was really confused. So I found a community, something in my community, where they were hosting a debate on vouchers, where I could hear both sides. So I went to this debate, and I listened to both sides. And I heard arguments on both sides that were passionate, but what I noticed was the arguments on the defeat voucher side were the same arguments the union was making. They were these, you know, public school's going to be ruined and all this stuff. The arguments on the other side actually made sense. They were talking about giving families the ability to choose what's best for their needs, best for their children, you know, giving children who are labeled ADHD and other horrible things in our public schools just because they're not good at sitting still for 8 hours a day, giving them an option to go to a school where they can do hands-on learning all day and not be labeled these horrible names, instead be valued for the wonderful things they bring to this world. And so I thought, this is great. I'm pro-voucher. So I go back to work, and during a mandatory staff meeting again, we're all being told how we have to phone bank, and this union rep's passing around a paper, and we're all supposed to sign up to phone bank, and I just passed it on because I wasn't going to phone bank against something I believe. And she stopped, and she looked right at me and said, you know, why didn't you sign the paper? You need to phone bank. And I told her as politely as I could, you know, I've been researching this. I've been reading about it, and I've you know, read the initiative. I've gone to debates, and I think vouchers are a good thing. I agree with this. It's going to save the taxpayers' money and everything. Well, right in the middle of that mandatory staff meeting, she looked at me and she said, "You're a radical right winger."
Wow.
And she totally isolated me, and every teacher in that room, I mean, it just got dead silent. And every teacher was too afraid at that point to speak what they really believed or what they really felt. And I knew many of them had their kids in private school and were having a hard time paying those bills for the private school and would have loved a voucher choice. But they didn't get that choice. Instead, they cowered and they all signed up to phone bank against their own values.
You know, Rebecca, even though I read that in the book, I'm still shaking my head that happened. I mean, what was your reaction when that happened? You know, and there was that dead silence in the room. What were you thinking?
Yeah. Well, it's awful. They do that on purpose so that you feel like the room's spinning when those things happen because you know all eyes are on you, and nobody's allowed to agree with you. You're hated, and you don't know who agrees with you because they're all too afraid to even smile at you or say, "Hey, I stand with her." And so you're just isolated, and that the unions are professionals at isolating people and making them feel fearful. But after that meeting, several teachers followed me back to my classroom and quietly told me that they agreed with me. And I said, "Why didn't you stand up? Why didn't you stand with me? Why didn't you not sign that paper?" And every one of them did what teachers have done to me my entire career. They didn't say one word. They just shrugged their shoulders.
Wow, they're just scared.
Speechless. They're terrified.
Yeah. Do you think school choice is good for teachers. I mean, so much of the emphasis, and, you know, I think rightly so, is on parental empowerment, you know, giving parents the ability to choose what's right for their kids. But there have certainly been people over many decades who have tried to make the case that, you know, expanding options would be good for teachers too. That message doesn't get out there anywhere near as much. What's your take on that? I mean, is it beneficial for teachers as well?
School choice is absolutely 100% beneficial for teachers, parents, kids, taxpayers, communities, everybody. Choice is, you know, let's just be honest. The teachers' unions stand for choice when it comes to something they want. But when it comes to something that, you know, is going to cause them to lose some money or power, they're all of a sudden against choice. That's being called a hypocrite. So choice is absolutely great for teachers. I'm just going to tell you a quick story. Right now, in America's schools, there are these racial equity discipline policies that came through the Obama era,
right,
and they are supported by the teachers' union. And we are no longer allowed to discipline children. We are not. Let me just give an example. The last class I taught, I had 4 severe discipline problems in my class. I could barely teach. And when I would remove one of those children from the class in order to teach the rest of the kids, the child would be brought back in 5 or 10 minutes from the principal and would have written me a note of apology and then proceeded to do the same behaviors again. There were no consequences. And so I couldn't teach. No one could learn. I couldn't teach. What's happening right now in America is a lot of teachers literally have PTSD because the discipline is so out of control, and they're being told it's the parents' fault. That's a lie. In a few cases, it might be the parents' fault. But why was it we used to be able to control all the kids?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's these discipline policies. All of these teachers are being harmed by these discipline policies just as much as the kids are being harmed. So what if they could go to a choice situation where those discipline policies aren't forced?
Well, they could create their own discipline policies that they think would work better.
There you go.
Right.
They could teach. They wouldn't have PTSD. They would enjoy their job. They could actually reach the children. So that's just one example. But choice is great for everybody.
Why do you think, and maybe you answered this earlier, but why do you think more teachers aren't pushing for choice? You know, in Florida, because we do have a fairly robust system of choice now. I mean, we obviously have a lot of charters like California, but we also have private school choice. And it's not hard to find teachers here who have left district schools, some of them because of the reasons you just listed, but for all kinds of reasons, they've left district schools where they were not satisfied, and they've gone to a charter, or they've gone to a private school, or they've gone to some other choice situation where they're much more satisfied. You know, those teachers are out there. You're out there. Why aren't more teachers advocating for choice, and why aren't more teachers going to those choice options in those places where they exist?
Mm-hmm. The short answer is teachers' unions.
Mm.
So I mentioned before that the unions have manipulated teachers and lied to them. And, okay, teachers love children. Real teachers are in the classroom to protect and educate children. And I'll tell you what, you've seen mama bears out there who do anything to protect their kids. That's how loving teachers are. You mess with their student, they're going to mess with you. That's what loving teachers do. We protect the students. So what the unions have done is they've manipulated teachers to such a degree, they've convinced teachers that choice situations are harming children. So those teachers recoil and say, I'm going to protect my students from that. So the reason why you're seeing teachers in Florida who are stepping into these choice situations is just because they've seen the truth. They've been educated, see that these schools are actually good for the kids and good for teachers. We will see widespread school choice when we can educate teachers on the truth. When I sit down with public school teachers, if let's say you and I were in a room with 100 public school teachers, if I ask this question, if your own child, the one you birthed from your womb, was in a dangerous school and you could not remove your child from that school, what would you do? You would watch these teachers get angry and fight and come up with some way to get their child out of that school. Well, what they don't understand is that when they fight school choice, they are leaving parents and kids vulnerable in dangerous situations and all kinds of stuff that teachers would never allow for their own kids.
Right.
So it's just a matter of educating them. Once teachers see the truth that they've been lied to by the unions, that these choice schools really are not bad, the charter schools really do have to close down in a few years if they don't get the job done, that public schools go on and on and on and on for years, even though they're failing and even though kids are getting in fights and everything else. Once teachers know the truth, they'll be on our side.
Rebecca, in your book, there were a couple of instances that you recounted of how school choice or the lack of it came into play in your own life with your own family. You know, I was wondering if you could talk about those situations just briefly. The first one was with your youngest son, if I remember correctly, and it was a situation where you had moved jobs to a different school and couldn't quite find a place that was good for your youngest son. Do I have that close to being right? I
mean, you're close. It is my youngest son. His name's Ben. What happened with Ben and me was when he was 3 years old, I became a single parent. That was never my dream or my goal in life, was to raise a child on my own. It was very difficult, hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I had to leave Ben in a lot of vulnerable situations because I could not obtain school choice. I did not have school choice in my neighborhood in Southern California. I could not afford to go and find a school of choice for him at this point. I was at my wit's end. So I went to my district. I had been teaching in the same school district for, gosh, by the time Ben was three, I had probably been there at least 10, 11 years. And so I went to my administration and I said, look, I'm in this desperate situation. I would love to bring my son into our school district. And my school district was a good 20-minute drive from our home. And I said, can I just have him in one of our schools? Because I have people I trust here in this neighborhood who could watch him in the afternoons and in the mornings, so I could have daycare for him at where he's safe, and then he could be close and I could keep an eye on him.
Mm-hmm.
They said no.
Wow, that sounds like a perfectly reasonable request. Why did they say no?
Well, they said no because, oh, we don't mix the personal with the professional. You work here. You're professional. I said, oh, okay. Well, how about we put him in one of our different schools, not the one I'm teaching in, but different. No, sorry, you can't do that. But wait a minute. Our superintendent did it. She did it with both of her girls.
Wow.
Brought them to kindergarten, and she didn't live in our district. She got to do it. No, sorry, Rebecca. Wait a minute. So-and-so did it, but they wouldn't let me. So it's, you know, whatever they feel, whatever is their decision, you know, you're at their mercy. So I ended up having to put Ben in the only school that I had to choose from, the one in my neighborhood. I never could find a decent person to watch him. He was left in many vulnerable situations. I would cry myself to work every day. I had to work. I had to put food on the table. It was a nightmare. All I was looking for was a school near my school or close to the daycare situation that I had available to me. It was an absolute nightmare. It brought more pain and more difficulty to my already very difficult situation, and it brought a lot of harm to my son. So that's just one of the stories that I went through with Ben that had to do with school choice.
Seemed to be no good reason that you had to go through that.
Yeah.
Now with your oldest son, there was also a choice situation, and it ended up better, right? I mean, he was at a uh-huh. at a place where he needed some more structure, some more discipline, and
yep.
in his case, you were able to find an option. Is that right?
Yeah, that's Kyle, our older son, and Kyle's situation actually saved his school choice, saved his life. And if he were here right now, he would tell you that. He would say, Mom, if I didn't go to Sunburst Youth Academy, I would be dead. He says that all the time.
Wow.
So what happened with Kyle is my stepson. I mean, in real life, he is my stepson. In my heart, he is 100% my son. You know, he just wasn't birthed by me.
Right.
But I told you that I became a single parent when Ben was three. I single parented for 7 years, and then I met my husband, Charles. We're married now, and Charles came as a package with Kyle. So I ended up with a stepson. He's about almost 5 years older than Ben. Shortly after we got married, Kyle was having a lot of problems basically we discovered he was abusing drugs.
Okay.
And we were at our wits' end. We tried everything that we knew how to do as parents. Kyle was very angry because someone in his life, someone who we should have been able to trust, was telling Kyle horrible things about me, was telling Kyle that I destroyed his family, that, you know, I caused a divorce in his family. But the truth was that his dad had been single parenting for 10 years before he even met me. And Kyle was just told a lot of lies that made him hate me.
Mm-hmm.
And also drove him to using drugs. We got to a point where we were unable to help Kyle. We were helpless. We had done counseling, taking him to the AA meetings and the Al-Anon and all of that stuff. And he was just spiraling downward. And so by God's grace, we found out about a school called Sunburst Youth Academy. These schools are all over the nation. They were started by the first President Bush, and they are schools that are run by the military. This one was run at the Joint Forces Training Base in Los Alamitos, California, and they work in conjunction with the School of the Department of Ed. So these kids go into a military situation, but they're also getting their education while they're there. The child has to want to be there. You can't force them to be there. So we had to come up with some very clever choices to help Kyle pick the right choice.
Right.
He ended up going to Sunburst. They lived there for almost 6 months. We would only talk to him every other Sunday for 5 minutes on the phone. It was devastating, but it changed his life. It was exactly what Kyle needed to shake him awake, to get him off the drugs, to change his life. And Kyle today, his dream was always to be a Major League Baseball player. In fact, it was, we told him that if he didn't go to Sunburst, we were going to take away all his baseball. That's how we got him to go. And
that sounds like a good motivator.
It's a huge motivator for a kid who wants to be a Major League Baseball player. So here he was spiraling downward. He literally, like he would tell you, he would have died without Sunburst because he was abusing so many drugs. But he turned around. He came back home. We worked hard to get him back to being a productive person. And do you know, he ended up being picked up by Long Beach State, pitched there, and was picked up by Major League Baseball in 2015, and to this day is playing in the minor leagues and loving life, never touched alcohol or drugs. He is just this happy, strong, loving person who is, you know, thriving in life.
Right.
And it was all because of a school choice situation, 100% because of that, and God's grace, of course.
Well, Rebecca, thanks for sharing both those stories about your kids. I thought it was really important to note that for the readers, because I knew that school choice for you wasn't some kind of abstract thing. It wasn't some kind of ideological thing. It's something that, just like it is for millions of parents, is real and concrete and often very urgent.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing both those stories. I wanted to turn to politics just really quickly.
Sure.
Well, you know, you describe yourself as a strong conservative. And the only reason I even bring that up is because, you know, there is a widespread perception, I think it's fair to say, that choice, educational choice, school choice, is somehow this right-wing thing, this Republican thing. How do you view it? Do you view it that way?
I don't care who I talk to. I don't care if you're apolitical, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, you're a libertarian, you don't vote. Everybody I know, once they understand school choice and they realize it's just what's best for the child,
right,
they're all for school choice.
Right.
Everybody believes in choice. Here's what's interesting. School is not supposed to be a political topic. Educating children is not political. How did it become political? Teachers' unions. For the whole history of this country, school was not political, and our schools were outstanding. They were the envy of the world. We had McGuffey readers and all kinds of incredible, traditional, classical liberal arts education. Our kids were learning well and loving it. And there weren't problems, discipline problems in our schools either. Then in the 60s, the unions showed up and they took over. And they took over in a really hurtful way that people can read in my book. And so they came in and they removed our great teaching and our values, and they brought in politics. So that's all that's happened, is school's been politicized. There's nothing political about it. It's time we remove the politics and we get back to what's right, and that's educating children, which is not rocket science.
Well, what suggestions would you have for chipping away at that myth? I mean, I think all of us over here, we certainly agree that's true. I mean, this has got to be the most ideologically diverse place I've ever worked at. I mean, there are people all along the political spectrum at Step Up, which I personally find very gratifying. But, you know, we are constantly battling this myth that it's somehow a conservative, right-wing, Republican thing. What can we do to, like, chip away at that more effectively?
That's the whole reason I wrote my book, is because here I've been in the school system, you know, 30 years, and I have watched my entire career as abusive teachers have been protected, as politics has taken over, as learning has left, failing kids, we're destroying their lives. If we're not educating children well, we're destroying them. That's wrong. That's just evil. My book, as you know, because you've read it, is full of dozens of real life stories of teachers, parents, and kids who are, we're just telling our stories.
Right.
It's our testimony of how unions have politicized us, lied to us, and we just put it out there. And so our goal and our hope and our prayer is that we can get this book into the hands of every teacher in this country and every loving parent and every leader who cares to realize that putting kids first is where we should be, and that unions have damaged us. So in my opinion, the answer is exposing that the emperor is naked here and the emperor is the unions. What they're doing is incredibly damaging. We have to expose them. And we have to give teachers the courage to stand together and reject unions. Because right now, teachers think the unions are protecting them. They don't know the unions are behind all of the hurtful stuff. So we just have to expose that.
Okay. Well, I have one last question. I saved the best one for last. And it has nothing to do with choice or with unions. It has to do with baseball. I'm a travel ball baseball dad. Both my boys play a lot of baseball. And so, you know, if I'm being honest, I have to say that even though I liked your entire book, one of the places where I was most glued to the pages was when you were describing Kyle, your oldest, in the minor leagues system, in the Oakland A's farm system, when he faced Mike Trout, who was rehabbing, and struck him out. I just thought that was the most amazing thing.
Okay, I just got the chills from head to toe. When you said that. Yeah, do I have time to tell the story?
Yeah,
so our Kyle, after going to Sunburst Youth Academy, after, you know, literally almost self-destructing with drugs, and he was lying a lot, he had all these issues, and so he becomes this decent person, he gets picked up by the A's, Oakland A's, he's up at AA, and he's doing great, but all of a sudden he can't control his pitches. And he's a right-handed pitcher. He doesn't have a lot of heat. His fastest pitch, I think, is 92 miles per hour.
Okay.
Yeah, but he strikes people out with junk. Fat pitches, throw a curveball, throw a sinker. I mean, he's such a great pitcher.
He's got multiple pitches, it sounds like.
Oh, he does.
Okay.
He's got a whole host of them. Mm-hmm. And he's one of these people with a cool head. I would get out there, if the bases were loaded and no outs, I would throw the ball over the backstop and freak out. He can strike out three guys in a row in that situation. I mean, he's just amazing. So cool. Cool-headed. So anyway, Kyle, all of a sudden, couldn't control his pitches. And he was getting beaten up on the mound, and they moved him down to high A, from double A down to high A. You know, this is someone who wants to play Major League Baseball. He was so discouraged. He gets down to high A, and his first game, he has to face Mike Trout. When Kyle got down there, he was talking to the pitching coach, and he'd played for this coach before, and so he's practicing, and the coach goes, "Hey, Kyle, you know, what? I want to talk to you about your grip. You know, I can see you can't control your pitches, but why did you change your grip?" And Kyle goes, "I didn't change my grip." He goes, "Yes, you did."
Oh.
So he shows Kyle, "Look, you're holding the ball different." So he fixes the grip, and sure enough, he controls the pitches again. He had just accidentally screwed himself up by changing his grip.
Yes.
So he gets out on the mound facing Mike Trout, and Charles and myself and my parents were there. We hardly ever get to go to Kyle's games because he's usually out of state. But this game was close to home. We're all in the stands. It's an Angels affiliate minor league team. And he's on the mound and he faces Mike Trout. First up, Mike Trout hits a weak grounder and they throw him out. But second up, Kyle strikes him out with one of the pitches he couldn't control before. And it was so amazing to watch it.
I mean, so
we
cool.
We came out of our seats screaming. And I'll never forget that day.
I hope he continues to persevere and keeps climbing through the ranks. And best of luck to you too, Rebecca. I really appreciate you taking all this time for us and allowing us to learn from you. I am in awe of the courage that you've shown for these many, many years fighting for a better way of organizing public education. And I hope everybody gets a chance to check out your book. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you. You call on me anytime. Anyone who fights for little kids is my friend.
All right, Rebecca, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.